Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 19, Swallowing the Forest Fire. Start with the chapter summary. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna saved the cows and the cowherd boys from a great fire in the Munjaranya forest. One day the cowherd boys became absorbed in sporting and allowed the cows to wander into a dense forest. Suddenly, a forest fire blazed up, and to escape its flames, the cows took refuge in a grove of sharp canes. When the cowherd boys missed their animals, they went searching for them, following their hoof prints and the trail of blades of grass and other plants that had been trampled or broken with their teeth. Finally, the boys found the cows and removed them from the cane forest. But by that time, the forest fire had grown strong and was threatening both the boys and the cows. Thus, the cowherd boys took shelter of Sri Krishna, the master of all mystic power, who told them to close their eyes. They did so, and in a moment he had swallowed up the fierce forest fire and brought them all back to the Bandira tree mentioned in the last chapter. Seeing this wonderful display of mystic potency, the cowherd boys thought Krishna must be a demigod, and they began to praise him. Then they all returned home, just like we hope to. All right, so we're going to chant text 1. I'm reading 1 through 6. We have text 1 up there. Good. Sri Sukhovacha. Krita Shakteshu Gopeshu. Tadgavo Duracharini. Svairam Charam Tyovivishus. Trina Lobena Gavaram. Sri Sukhuvacha Krita Shakteshu Gopeshu Tat Gavo Duracharina. I'm sorry about that. Svanaya Charatyo Vivishus Trina Lobena Gavaram Sri Sukhuvacha Krita Shakteshu Gopeshu Tadgavo Duracharini Svairam Charam Tu Vivishush Trina Lobena Gavaram. Please chant. Sukhuvacha Ladies.
Jesus.
Sri Sukhavacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Prida, in their playing, Ashakteshu, while they were completely absorbed, Gopeshu, the cowherd boys, Tatgava, their cows, Duracharini, wandering far away, Shvairam, independently, Charantya, grazing, Vivishu, they entered, Trina, for grass, Lobena, out of greed, Gavaram, a dense forest. Translation. Sukadev Goswami said, while the cowherd boys were completely absorbed in playing, their cows wandered far away. They hungered for more grass, and with no one to watch them, they entered a dense forest. Complete supreme. Sukadev Goswami said, while the cowherd boys were completely absorbed in playing, their cows wandered far away. They hungered for more grass. And with no one to watch them, they entered a dense forest. I've been assigned the first six verses. There's no purport on any of them, so I'll read the following five verses. Passing from one part of the great forest to another, the goats, cows, and buffalo eventually entered an area overgrown with sharp canes. The heat of a nearby forest fire made them thirsty, and they cried out in distress. Not seeing the cows before them, Krishna, Rama, and their cowherd friends suddenly felt repentant for having neglected them. The boys searched all around but could not discover where the cows had gone. Then the boys began tracing out the cows' path by noting their hoof prints and the blades of grass the cows had broken with their hooves and their teeth. All the cowherd boys were in great anxiety because they had lost the source of their livelihood. Ishatasha. Within the Munja forest, the cowherd boys finally found their valuable cows, who had lost their way and were crying. Then the boys, thirsty and tired, herded the cows onto the path back home. The Supreme Personality of Godhead called out to the animals in a voice that resounded like a rumbling cloud. Hearing the sound of their own names, the cows were overjoyed and called out to the Lord in reply. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Ummilitam Yinatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Koroti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayati Agirim Yakripa tamaham bande sri gurum dinatarino. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasini Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Avancha kalpa tirubhyascha kripa sindhu bahibhacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So a couple of days ago, I was listening to Nagaraj give class on Palambasura, and I was thinking, wow, I was getting ready for work and just caught a part of it, but I thought, ah, Palambasura, this was my first pastime that I memorized as a brahmachari, and I had the whole pastime down, and when we would drive out to Sankirtan, I would tell the story to all the rest of the brahmacharis in the van, and we would always ad-lib the different parts. We were a lively crew of young boys. And so I was thinking, boy, it'd really be nice to give a class on this part of the Bhagavatam. But anyway, I get this crazy schedule. So, and, you know, class gets scheduled a month in advance, or whatever. So that very afternoon, I got a phone call. Said, Prabhu, we've got an opening on Thursday. Can you give class? And it happened to be a day I had the morning free. So all I can say is Krishna does fulfill your desires. So watch out for what you wish for. So additionally, I was told that they wanted me to give class because I was going to be the substitute for Radhanath Maharaj. since he's not giving class here this morning. I don't know how in the world anybody could assume I could be a suitable substitute for such a wonderful advanced devotee as Radhanath Maharaj, but I pray that I'll be able to be at least a little shadow of the depth of his presence of Krishna consciousness with this presentation here. So this particular pastime, swallowing the forest fire, and the previous pastime, the killing of the Pralambasura demon, these take place in the Mandiravan forest. And the fact that they take place in the Mandiravan forest explains why it was that Balaram was the one that killed the Pralamba demon. Because the forests on the eastern side of the Jamuna, these are under the control of Lord Balaram. That's his zone, if you will. These include Bhadravan, Bilvavan, Lohavan, Gokula, Mahavan, and then, of course, this forest, Bandiravan. And so Balaram being the prominent deity there, there are many temples of Lord Balaram in these different places, and being the prominent deity there, this was his time to exert himself. Of course, we've mentioned before the fact that he took his, made his appearance prior to Krishna is very significant, dating back to the Ramalila. We've mentioned this many times, that during Ramalila, as Lakshman, of course, he was subservient to Ram and had a little fire he wanted to manifest in many of the different pastimes that took place during Lord Ramchandra's Leela. But as the junior brother, he had to acquiesce to the desire and instruction of Lord Ram. He took a vow at that time, I will never take a subservient position in incarnations again. And of course, this is why he manifested before Lord Krishna in this pastime, and even more prior to that in the pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, not to get off course. So this was his area. And the Bandiravan forest actually has many different pastime places associated with it. There's a famous place called Venukup, and this is a well that during the pastimes of the cowherd boys in this forest, they became very thirsty, and there was no water around, so Krishna took his flute, poked a hole in the ground, and a nice well came up there, very cool, refreshing water, and the cowherd boys, the cows all drank from that, became very refreshed. That well is still there. You can go and visit that place. This is now, interesting thing about that well. During the phases of the moon, when the Amavasya, the new moon, happens to fall on a Monday, the water in that well appears to be milk. It takes on a whitish color and is understood to be milk-like. And so during that time, the local residents hold a huge, big festival. Of course, you know, you can always tell in advance, oh, wait, the Amavasya is on a Monday. So they plan this out, and it's a very big festival held there at this place, Venugup. So if you plan your life out in such a way to check the new moon on a Monday, you can go to Venugup and have a great time there with all the rest of the residents there. Another thing is that in the Bandiravan forest, this is a place where Radharani and the gopis engaged in wrestling matches. Radha instituted some wrestling matches between her and her girlfriends. So for the ladies that think that only the guys get to wrestle, of course, this was a girls-only event, except for one certain young boy of a bluish complexion that managed to get involved in the affairs. That's another pastime which we won't go into here. But that takes place in the Bandiravan forest. Jiva Goswami, now as we know, Jiva Goswami presents the marriage of Radha and Krishna to pacify certain aspects of devotees, Vaishnavas, who were concerned about the relationship between Krishna and the unmarried girls. So Jiva Goswami gives that understanding there. And this Bandiravan forest is the place where the marriage of Radha and Krishna takes place. It's performed in that area. And then, of course, as mentioned in the previous chapter, there's the Bandiravat tree, this beautiful, huge, big banyan tree, which is quite expansive and very, very comfortable place for the cows and the cowherd boys to wander underneath it. And some of the branches are low, so the boys climb out on them and play jumping games and all. And it's a very nice place to rest up against the tree. And so a lot of their pastimes take place underneath it. And this is, of course, where the Pralamba pastime begins. The boys are all resting there when he comes in disguise like that. So many, many different pastimes in this Bandiravan forest. So if we read through these particular chapters, 17, 18, 19, I believe the next chapter is the rainy season, autumn, even nicer. There's very, very wonderful descriptive, many descriptive words given that allow you to develop a very vivid and beautiful picture within the mind of what's going on in Vrindavan. Vivid, that's the only word I can think of. Just it's so wonderful. You read this and you really become absorbed in how beautiful and how wonderful and how pleasing and satisfying to the mind this entire pastime in these wonderful forests is. And we're allowed to see that more clearly, of course, when we get Premanjana Charita, Bhakti Vilochanena, when our eyes become purified. Then we see this not just through the words of the Bhagavatam, which is the method in which we're having Krishna's pastimes revealed to us in our conditioned state through the acharyas, but we actually will be able to see these pastimes. So these descriptions, these verses, these different chapters, they're to kind of give us a hankering for that, to paint the pictures to what we should desire and what we can expect if we're fortunate enough to return back to home, back to Godhead. Now, in the Bandiravan forest is another place, and it's deep in the forest. It's not like on the perimeters. You have to travel deep into it. It's actually considered a deep, dark section of it, and it's called the Munja Forest. It's a forest within the forest. Not to be confused with the Munja Forest, which is in Western Australia. Same title, same edible plants and everything in both places. Completely different pastime. So it's a very deep, dark area of the Bandiravan forest, and it's named this because of the Munja grasses which grow there. And Munja grass is a very interesting thing. Munja grass is kind of like sugar cane in the sense that it has long, tall grasses, and at the bottom where the little greener parts are, it's very soft and very sweet and very tasty, and the cows like it very much. But as it grows, the leaves become sharp and unpleasant and almost like kusha grass, and then it grows into the reeds themselves. Now, the you know, the cows, they like the sweet, soft tasting grasses, and so they're kind of wandering about. But it's also, because of this, it's a bit dangerous because the other parts of the Munja grass are sharp and they can cut the tongue and a little unpleasant like that. So that's why it was considered a dangerous place. They had different functions. Another interesting thing about Munja grass is there's actually a samskara that's it's pretty much largely forgotten about. It's not really well observed. But when a boy would be between the ages of 8 and 12, he would go to the Munja forest, or they would collect grass from the Munja forest and braid it into a girdle, which would be wrapped around his waist. A little austere to wear this because the grasses are a little sharp like that. And at that time, he would be given the first line of Gayatri. An interesting side note on this. If by some chance of fate, in receiving this, the boy happened to depart from this world within 10 days of this, he would become a Munja ghost and reside in that Munja forest, which is another reason it was considered a dark, dangerous place because of the possibility of these ghosts. And these particular types of ghosts were known for being a little sharp, very nasty in their nature. So just an interesting side note on that. But at any rate, the grass itself, it's used for all kinds of things, for making baskets and thatched roofs. And, you know, the very delicate part of it down there, aside from being very tasty to the cows, it's used medically to stop bleeding. So, you know, it was a very wonderful place, but dangerous because of it. And then the mature reeds, they're so strong, they're actually used in arrows. For Kshatriyas, they would use these for training in their arrows like that. So, you know, the cows kind of wandered about and ended up in this forest seeking a desire for newer and fresher and tastier grasses. Now, the thing is, they're cows, so they were being herded, which means they're being watched. So how did they wander off? Now, there's two words in the very first verse here, which I thought were completely indicative of this entire pastime. These two words kind of are the pivot on which this whole short pastime, there's only like six, seven more verses after this, of which this whole pastime hinges on, and that is krita ashakteshu. Krita ashakteshu. The boys being completely absorbed in playing. Wow, what a surprise. Completely absorbed in playing. They forgot everything else. We've never seen that. Actually, we see it all the time. When the young boys get into it. I remember back in when we were living in Brooklyn, when my son was 3, 4 years old, and Gaur Shakti was living there also with his family. And my son and Gaur Shakti used to play all the time. And in our brownstone, we had a little patio and a little backyard. And they would go out there and they just completely absorbed, just, you know, completely lost in their games. Sometimes they were very nice devotional games, and sometimes they were just little, you know, He-Man and whatever the, you know, all those little plastic figures. But the thing is, they just get completely absorbed in their play, and they forget all sense of time and hunger. I mean, we've all had that experience when we were younger. Mom sends us out, you know, of course, nowadays, I don't know how, you know, so many video distractions and stuff. But when I was a kid, my mother very promptly would walk in, turn the TV off, and say, "Out!" And that was it. You were outside, and you would hop on your bike and go and come back 8, 9, 10 hours later, whatever, you know. And, you know, just you completely forget all time, all hunger, all external circumstances. You're just totally absorbed in playing like that. I actually I had a little experience with that last night trying to park the cars over at Satius. You know, not me getting lost in parking the cars, but the boys that were there, the young boys, are running all through the parking area, you know, back completely in their own world. I'm like, "Kids, you can't do this. There's cars. Somebody's going to get hit." But they're just like, they're lost in their play, not conscious of what's going on around them. So this is what happened to the cowherd boys. This is how this whole pastime of the cows wandering off grows from. This krita ashakteshu, just completely absorbed in their playing, you know. So this is to be expected with little boys, you know. And, you know, when we know from the age described here, these are, you know, these boys are what, like 10, 12, maybe 13, you know, right around that 8 to 12-year-old range. That's the point at which the boys were given jurisdiction, a gopastami. That's the whole point of the gopastami lila. The boys are given jurisdiction over the older cows, and they take them out to all the surrounding places. Prior to that, all they get is just the little calves. You just take care of the little ones here, you know. So, but they're trained from an early age because they're cow herders to take care of the cows, whether they be old or younger. And then as they graduate, they're given more responsibility. Now, it's interesting in the second verse here, because when we think of Krishna and the cows, we think of literally Krishna and the cows. But we have three words here: gava, cows; aja, goats; and maishya, buffalo. So they're not just herding the cows, but they're herding cows and goats and buffalo. Because, you know, we kind of have this condescending of buffalo, you know, buffalo are useless, you know. And that's because, of course, the fact that buffalo milk gets substituted for cow's milk a lot in India and all like that. But here, goats. Now, if you've got goats, obviously they're milking the goats. You turn the goat's milk into cheese and you get some nice feta. I mean, we might like to think that feta originates from Italy and Israel, but, you know, I mean, obviously they're doing something with the product of the goat, you know. So primarily, Krishna is taking all the cow products, but there are other domesticated animals there. So we see right here in the Bhagavatam, goats and buffalo. So the boys had a sizable responsibility to take care of, you know. And so, you know, they've got all this going on, and as they are, boys will play, and they get absorbed, as we mentioned, and the cows wander off, and then they suddenly snap out of their play, and they realize, whoa, they're gone. Who's gone? The cows are gone. The goats are gone. The buffalo are gone. Everybody's gone. What happened? Well, you know, we're all playing. We just, you know, where'd they go? They have no idea. So what does it mention? It mentions jata anutapa. Jata anutapa, that they felt great remorse when they realized they had abandoned their duty. They had forgotten their obligations, and the most valuable thing. This is a cowherd community. This is an agricultural community. What is the greatest value? The cows, the livestock. I mean, if you go into parts of America where they do different things with cows than we're talking about here, that is the most valuable thing they have, the land and their cows. So the boys have been given charge by their elders. You take the cows, you take the buffalo, you take the goats, you go out and herd them, let them do the thing, then bring them back. And they've completely blown it. You know, and now they feel remorse. This is a really important point because it shows that when they came out of that playful mood and went like, oh, anyway, the cow's worn it off. Okay, Dad will take care of it. You know, Mom will come out and save us, you know. No, but they actually felt a sense of responsibility for the service they had been given. So I was thinking how this is very similar to the nature of the jiva. You know, that in our sojourn through this material world, 8,400,000 different types of bodies and unlimitedly different types of mentalities and, you know, just vastly expanded different types of desires and everything, that somehow or another, due to the mercy of the pure devotee, we come into contact with Krishna consciousness. When we come into contact with that Krishna consciousness, in order to move forward, in order to actually advance, we have to have this, jata anutapa. We have to have a feeling of remorse about the activities we've performed previously, about the fact that I've been in this world for so many births, about the fact that I've been every different type of body, that I've got so many desires that are even embarrassing to mention, what to speak of, think of. So we have to feel a certain amount of remorse about that. That feeling of remorse allows us to move forward and advance in Krishna consciousness. Just as that feeling of remorse in the cowherd boys allowed them to, all right, snap out of their play. Okay, you know, wow, we're not doing, okay, well, we lost the cows. Now what? Okay, well, let's trace them out. Now, that also indicates that they must have been pretty good at tracking. You know, okay, well, look, you know, all the, I mean, if you live in the woods, in the forest, you learn how to deal with these things, you know. It's not so amazing. Okay, well, the leaves are all broken there, and there's where the cows chewed off the sweet grass there, and oh, look, here's where it's all trampled out, so they went this way, you know. So they follow them like that. So, you know, this, again, is indicative of the situation of the conditioned living entity when we come to the process of devotional service. Is that we have to be able to look ahead of us at the path that the spiritual master, at the path that the great Vaishnavas before us have charted out. Oh, they've gone this way. Oh, no, they didn't go that way. They didn't pursue, you know, profit distinction and adoration. They were very strict in their sadhana here. They were sadhakas going this direction. That we have to look at that and see, how can I achieve my goal by following in that same manner? Just as the cowherd boys were looking like that. Okay, how can we achieve our goal of attaining the cows back by following in their path? We have to have that same mood of following the footsteps of the spiritual master. And this is an important mood of repentance that has to be there, you know, to, you know, feel that the previous activities were not acceptable. That, you know, it's something that we did and we're sorry about it, but we have to move away from it like that. So, at any rate, they find the cows, you know, because after all, they are cowherd boys and they're not going to give up. They're very dedicated. They've got some, you know, commitment to their service. And they finally find the cows in. What condition do they find the cows in? Brashta margam karadamanam. Brashta margam karadamanam. Lost and crying. The cows have completely become sad because the cows also have feelings. This is the whole point of our protection of the cows. They're a sentient being. And aside from the fact they're in the spiritual world, they're all Krishna's associates. So, but they've got feelings. They're feeling that separation from the cowherd boys. We're lost. We don't know where to go. We're stuck here in this deep forest with reeds and sharp grasses and maybe some real good sweet stuff there, but all these dangerous scenarios. What do we do? What do we do? And on top of that, they're becoming completely thirsty because of an encroaching forest fire. Now, there's a little background story as to what was the origin of this forest fire. Some stories put forth that this forest fire was started by some of Kamsa's servants who were trying, of course, to cause so much constant trouble in Braj. At any rate, the forest fire is there, and it's starting to crush. The cows are becoming very thirsty. So when the boys find them, they're lost and they're crying. And here again, I was thinking this is very applicable to our situation in devotional service. As we approach the process of devotional service, we, in that repentant state which I mentioned, we feel ourselves to be lost and crying. You know, we're in a pitiful condition. We have no way of extracting ourselves from the circumstance we find ourselves in. And so that same mood of feeling lost and crying for the mercy of the Lord, you know, this is something that, you know, we have to actually feel within our heart. If we read the writings of the Goswamis and we read through the Nectar of Devotion, this mood of separation, this mood of painful hankering for the process of advancing in devotional service, for entering into the pastimes of Krishna and his associates, this is a prominent mood amongst the acharyas who have gone before us, amongst those who have set a standard and an example for us. Now, it can't be falsely manifest. Prabhupada's very clear about that. And when we have seen that, it's only led to the chaos and downfall of individuals manifesting it. But it is a mood that we should see is the direction we're going. And in our own circumstance, we have to feel a certain sense of lost, crying, separation from the Lord, and, you know, trying to extract ourselves from that by the mercy of the spiritual master. So in this way, the boys find the cows and they get them all secured. And so at this point, the forest fire has encroached greatly. And so Krishna begins to step in here. Now, in the last verse that I was asked to cover for the day, I noticed here the not seeing the cows before. Oh, no, wait, sorry, that's four. Here we go. Yeah, yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead called out to the animals in a voice that resounded like a rumbling cloud. Hearing the sound of their own names, the cows were overjoyed and called out to the Lord in reply. We've recently had some very serious storms come through here, and the thunder that accompanied it was very prominent. I was at work, and we're in this concrete box. You don't hear anything going on outside. But when the thunder would take place, we would actually hear that rumbling, even inside of a building like that. So this type of rumbling thunder is very prominent. It can't be missed. So in the same way, when Krishna was calling out the names of the cows, calling out to them, it was like rumbling sound of thunder, and it could easily be heard by the cows. Now, it mentions, I thought this was very good, Krishna called out, and the cows, hearing the sound of their own names. The cows all had names. You know, it's not just like, in this modern day and age, people keep all kinds of pets. They don't just keep them, oh, there's a cat. Well, actually, I do. I got a feral cat that lives around our house, and it's been there for 10 years. I just call it Cat. We never gave it a name. You know? Now the cat's back there, you know. So, because I don't want to, nothing to do with it. At any rate, people, when they have these pets, they give them a name. And when the pet dies, they have a funeral. And I swear, as I sit here, I see these people come into Lowe's where I work with these little doggies in their little outfits, and this one lady brings them with this little hat and his little necklace, and they put them in the little shopping carts. One lady brought her dog in and put it in the shopping cart that's shaped like a race car and put its little paws up on the steering wheel. I'm like, really? Yeah. You people need a life. So, you know, they all have names. So it mentions, for instance, Krishna's calling out the names. The black cows, and there are many different colored cows, keep in mind. The black cows have names like Shamala, Dumala, Jamuna. And then you've got white cows. And the white cows have names like Diwali, Hamsi, Mukta, Chandani. And then you get red cows. We've kind of seen reddish colored cows here, but these are red cows. Aruni, Kunkuma, Saraswati. And then you get yellow cows. Now, these aren't like some of the kind of beigey cows. I mean, these are actually yellow cows. Of course, there's blue ones and green ones too. But at any rate, The Cowherd Boys all have different colors as well. I remember Rock Talk was one of my favorite Cowherd Boys. The brahmachari is green, you know. So anyway, you get the yellow cows, Pita, Pingala, Haritaki. So Krishna's not just saying, hey, cow, hey, cow. Or, you know, like sometimes you get it, you've seen it, devotees walk past the cows and they go, oh, you know, thinking like the cow, oh, there's another cow. Oh, I'll come, you know. They see us drive by in the car and we make that moo sound like, oh, the cow thinks, oh, there's a cow, let me walk over there, you know. I mean, you know, cows are a little smarter than that. But here they've got names. So Krishna's calling out, hey, Shyamala, Dumala, oh, Mukta, Aruni, Pingali. And his voice is thundering very loudly. And so the cows hear this. And what do? They respond back. They respond back. It's a cow in his spiritual world. So, and this is a very interesting point, too, how the cows are responding back. Because this speaks to the nature of rasa. Rasa is what we are culminating our devotional service in. There are different types of rasas. The Nectar of Devotion is very detailed on these. And there are rasas between Krishna and the cows. So here it is. The last two Sanskrit words in the verses I've got here were very, very significant here. After Krishna calls the names of the cows, what is their response? Pratinedu prahashita. Pratinedu prahashita. They replied, greatly enlivened. So with enthusiasm and satisfaction and happiness, they replied to Krishna calling them. So here again, this is a very interesting point, because when we engage in devotional service, when we execute the principles of devotional service, we are hoping for some reciprocation. This is the whole nature of all of our relationships. We want reciprocation. You know, when you have the opportunity to sit here and give class and you look out and everybody's falling asleep, it's like, oh, all right, you know. But if you see faces that are bright and paying, you feel, oh, a little encouraged. So the cows are hearing not only Krishna's voice, but they're hearing Krishna's voice call their actual name. And they feel very enlivened, and they reciprocate by responding. This is the process of our devotional service. We have all had the experience, by the fact that we're still here, we've all had the experience where Krishna has reciprocated with us in the process of our devotional service. That's why we're still here. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you can't do it unless you're feeling some reciprocation. You know? I mean, how is it marriages last, you know, for as long as they do? My wife and I have been married for 32 years because we feel some reciprocation in the relationship, right? So in the nature of the relationship with Krishna, these cows have a rasa, and they're feeling enlivened by knowing Krishna has reciprocated with them. And this is what drives us in our desires to advance in devotional service, feeling that reciprocation with Krishna, feeling that reciprocation with Krishna's devotees. This is the impetus that keeps us enlivened and wanting to move forward like that. So this is the way that we capture the mind, by these different pastimes of the Lord, by these different leelas that are going on. These are the descriptions which will keep us focused and enlivened in devotional service. This is why Srila Prabhupada was so adamant in the beginning of his being with us to produce the Krishna book from the 10th canto. Translate the Krishna book and make it available, because Prabhupada, you know, understood clearly, I may or may not make it all the way through. As he said many times, I'm an old man. So he put this Krishna book out with the full purpose that the Krishna book would be a means for us to absorb ourselves in these pastimes of Krishna. Today, as we mentioned, is the disappearance of Jayananda Prabhu, and I would be greatly remiss in my responsibilities as his godbrother, as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and as a Vaishnavacharya biographer, if I didn't say a few words about Jayananda. So, what did Jayananda say about the Krishna book? In Jayananda's own personal copy of the Krishna book, in the front, he had written the following things. These are his words about the importance of Krishna book. As you begin to apply this book's clearly described principles to your life, you will quickly experience a new realm of mental poise, and experience an inner happiness even in the midst of the most trying circumstances. You will worry less and enjoy more. Your power of concentration, memory, understanding, and creativity will increase. You will work more energetically, more confidently, and more effectively, as well as relate better to people. I mean, just on this alone, every corporation in America should be buying up Krishna book nonstop. And you will succeed more easily at whatever you're trying to do. At night, you will fall asleep immediately. And in the morning, you will awaken thoroughly refreshed with even less hours of sleep than you would normally need. Consequently, you will understand the real purpose of your life and your unique role in creation. So this was Jayananda's appreciation of reading Krishna book. Very, very nice. Jayananda Prabhu, of course, loved prasadam. Jayananda was a prasadam addict. There are endless stories. I mean, I have, you know, well, there's a book published, and I have endless collections of stories and all. We could go on and on and on, but I'm just going to throw a few of these out here, try and keep in time with the very specific note here on the speaker seat. But he was particularly fond of three types of prasadam: halava, sweet rice, and khichdi. And of that halava, his particular favorite was peanut butter halava. Absolutely relished peanut butter halava. Of course, he was slightly partial to kalabjimins also. There was a famous Govardhan Hill. It was the Govardhan Puja Festival in San Diego in 1973 out in the park. And they had made like 6 billion kalabjimins. I mean, there's many stories from different devotees about that huge quantity of kalabjimins there. But after the festival was finished, most of the devotees had returned back, and it was just Jayananda and a handful of brahmacharis left to do all the cleanup. Any time there was cleanup responsibilities, you knew Jayananda was going to be there. That was just, you know, there was something like that to be done, he would do it. So as they were cleaning up, of course, there were kalabjimins laying in the grass, and there were kalabjimins on partially eaten plates of prasadam. There was still a few kalabjimins, I don't know how this happened, on Govardhan Hill. The end of Govardhan Puja here, the hill's not even there. But so anyway, Jayananda got a kirtan party together with the brahmacharis, and they went around picking up the plates, and as they got kalabjimins, they would eat them or feed them to each other, or he would eat more of them. And you know, and as everybody remembers, it was involved with the kirtan and the kalabjim eating, and the cleanup just went on for hours, you know. And Jayananda would stop in the middle and say, "Oh, these kalabjimins, these are the best kalabjimins that have ever been made." Of course, Jayananda always said that about every prasadam. "Oh, this is the best khichdi. Oh, this is the best peanut butter halva." One time, Jambavan Prabhu, who was a close associate of Jayananda's, he was it was the middle of the night. He was laying in bed asleep. It was one of the big festivals. And Jayananda, of course, was up at all hours finishing everything that had to be done. This was like 1 o'clock in the morning or something, and Jambavan remembers somebody, "Jambavan, wake up, wake up. I got something for you. Wake up, wake up." Jambavan kind of rolls over and goes, "Huh?" And he sees Jayananda. Jayananda says, "Open your mouth, open your mouth." And Jambavan goes, "What? Open your mouth." And he puts a big bowl, serving of peanut butter halva in his mouth. So Jayananda was like that, you know. And he was expert at cooking sweets as well. And he very much liked cakes, and he would take cakes around during the Ratha Yatras. Of course, we all know the stories. He would go to all the different types of vendors and collect all types of prasadam, I mean bhoga, for making into prasadam and everything. And he would get all of that organized, and then he would go back to all those same vendors and deliver cakes and cookies to them and all like that. And everybody loved him. It didn't matter if you were a devotee or a non-devotee or a public official. Everybody loved him. Matter of fact, there was one particular individual that was responsible for giving the permits for the Ratha Yatra parade. And so the devotee says, this was after Jayananda had passed away, and this particular city official was known to be very, very rough and gruff and not very pleasant in her demeanor, and, you know, very bureaucratic and everything. And so they went in, and she saw the devotees, and they mentioned what they were there for. She said, well, where's Jayananda? I'm not giving a permit to anybody except Jayananda. And then they had to explain to her that Jayananda had passed away. And this hardcore bureaucratic official just lost it, started crying, had to excuse herself from going to the other room, and just, you know, for 5 or 10 minutes was just in there crying. And so she came back in, and you know, she gave all the devotees the permits, and then just acknowledged what a wonderful person Jayananda was, and how kind and soft-hearted and polite he was, and, you know, like that. Everybody always said that, you know, what a wonderful devotee Jayananda was. And he was the most hard-working. Many times he would, you know, be up all hours of the night doing all the services that had to be done, but nobody would stay up and do. And as a result, when there'd be darshans the next morning with Srila Prabhupada, he would be sitting in the back, you know, completely asleep, you know. And so the devotees would go to wake him up, and Prabhupada said, no, just let Jayananda sleep. Well, Prabhupada was very much aware of the fact that Jayananda was working so hard, and just, you know, let him have that, you know, time to take the rest that he had. Jayananda's mother mentions a very interesting thing when he was a young boy, just as a kind of a idea of his thought process throughout his life. He was, she says he was about 4 years old, and they had taken him to a very big church. It was some important service in the church, and so he went with the family, and they said as he walked in, it was a big sanctuary, and he was looking all around, and he was walking to all the places and looking, and you could see he was earnestly looking at everything, and his mother said, what's wrong? What are you doing? What are you looking for? He said, well, I'm trying to find God. This is his house, isn't it? So he had that interest, that desire to, you know, pursue spiritual life, even from a younger age. There's a nice appreciation here from his sister. You know, we've all heard so many appreciations from the devotees over the years, and we'll read a couple more of those too, but this was her reflection, that my brother was a really great person. He was a very honest person, better than I was when we were kids. He was 2 years older than me. He was very intelligent, very smart, and he never lied. He always told the truth. He was very truthful. I mean, he was much more truthful than I was, I can say that. He was very well behaved as a child. We had a few friends, but he didn't really have too many close friends in high school, and he left and moved to Cleveland for his senior year. He was just a remarkable person, intelligent. He was a great writer. He wrote a story, I think it was in the 9th grade, about where he worked. And he worked in a car with a mechanic for a while, and he helped this guy out who had a garage. But he wrote a story about the place, and it was about a ghost that lived in that place and how he dealt with that ghost. It's an excellent story. It would be nice to read that if it were available. He was very far advanced from the thinking of most people. He read books that were very far advanced, too. He was reading heavy books when he was in college, psychology and all that. He went to a church a lot, much more than I did, and he was very religious. He was kind to animals, too. I remember we were on the beach in California, and he sat there for like 3 hours picking ticks off this poor old mutt of a dog that was just wandering around. That's just the kind of person he was, you know? This dog had nobody taking care of him and had tons of ticks, and he just sat there and took them off. I remember when he visited us in 1969. That's when he was into Krishna consciousness. And he visited, and my aunt was there. And she was like a grandmother to all of us and was his favorite. So he was there with my 3 kids, and he came to visit, and he cooked us wonderful food and offered it and sat around. And he was in his robes. And he came alone, and we met him in the airport. He played all of the Hare Krishna music for us, but the food he made, we just remembered it was so good. He prepared those fried tomatoes. It was the most unusual food, but it always tasted so good. It was kind of nice to know that your brother was so well thought of and was such a wonderful person and did so many things. He was just a different person. He was like an old soul in a young body. I remember when I looked at pictures of him as a young boy, I thought, yeah, he's like an old soul. You know, he was just not meant for this world. He was an amazing person, and he deserves to be called a saint. I had a couple of unfortunate exchanges with Jayananda. We were on the same Radha-Damodar bus together for a short time, but we also were in New York and 55th Street at the same time period. And back in those days, the building was divided up by floors, brahmacharis on one floor, ladies on another floor, households like that. And the building we were in had 25 rooms. It was an old hospital for retired and aging nuns. And there were 25 rooms, and then there was a main room with a pantry where the person in charge of each floor would stay. So we had a similar system. There'd be one person in charge of the floor and all the brahmacharis. So there was this pantry there. And every, I think it was every Monday, yeah, because we did Sankirtan on the weekends, so we had Mondays off. So every Monday, the temple president would go around and do a tour of all the different floors, make sure everything was clean, everything was proper and like that. So I was walking with them, and Dutta Prabhu, my godbrother, was the prefect for the fifth floor. And as we were touring, we came to that little pantry next to the elevators. We heard a bit of activity in there. We looked in there, and there was Jayananda Prabhu, and he was in there scrubbing the tiles in the pantry. And the temple president turned to Dutta Prabhu, and he said, "You realize you've got the senior most devotee in this entire building scrubbing the tiles in the pantry?" And Jayananda just looked up in his typical humility and said, "Well, somebody has to do it, so I just decided to do it." You know, that was just the way Jayananda was. He didn't think of himself as the senior most anything. He just always did whatever had to be done. He was also in 55th Street. We had a restaurant, and it was a very successful and active restaurant. And of course, when you've got a restaurant and an 11-story building and 200 devotees in the temple, you've always got dirty pots. And the pot area ran from, I don't know, about here to the back wall there, just along one wall, and there were three big sinks, and it was always full of pots. So the program for the deities there at that time was after the last arti at 9, the deities got changed and put to bed, so they took rest about 10 o'clock, and then all the pujaris would go down and raid the kitchen. That was our standard procedure. Go down and find whatever prasadam was left or maha, and then, you know, kind of have a little bit of an evening party before we called it a night. And I was a little more crazy as a brahmachari, if you can imagine that. And I remember we went down there one evening, and I was apparently particularly boisterous. And Jayananda, as we entered the kitchen, all of us quite loud and eager for whatever prasadam we'd get our hands on left over from the restaurant, Jayananda looked up at me, and he stopped washing his pots and turned around and just shook his head, and he said, "Shataratma, you're just a live wire." And that was a badge that I wore very proudly, having been titled by Jayananda like that. But even in Jayananda's final days, when he was in the hospital with his leukemia and was nearing his very end, he was constantly preaching. He would go around to the devotees who come to visit, and he'd have them put him in the wheelchair and roll him around to the different rooms. And he knew everybody in all the rooms. This is Mrs. So-and-so, and her son lives there, and he's got two grandchildren that come to see her. And then he would say to the person, "So have you read those books I gave you?" And the lady would say, "Oh, well, you know, I got halfway through the magazine, and I started reading that Krishna book. But I do have a question. Who's Balaram?" So, you know, even in his final days like that, Jayananda was always preaching. So, you know, Jayananda is one of those success stories that as devotees we can relate to in ISKCON, that can give a little hope and encouragement to us that, you know, success in devotional service is actually possible in this day and age. So it's 9 o'clock, we'll finish there. Everybody should take the time to read about Jayananda today. There's endless resources. You know, you just go to Google Prabhu, and you can find anything you want about Jayananda, and kind of be inspired by his example, and hope that someday we can all be as successful in devotional service, so much so that Prabhupada wrote a letter confirming his level of advancement after his time in this body. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai.